it was the first time I had ever heard that you could get a degree in winemaking. And I said, that's for me.
Robert Parker has established himself as a critical reviewer with an acute palate. I'm just wondering where that female is.
The wine industry is addicting. It draws you back.
To me, the romance is in the glass, and it's when you're done with the bottle.
And we would spend our summer afternoons swimming in the irrigation pond for 3 to 4 hours a day.
Even though it's tough work, nobody said it would ever be easy. You know, we do it as a family.
In the final analysis, somebody's going to pop the cork, and they're either going to like the wine or they're not going to like the wine.
Since I made Cabernet all my life at Beringer, I buy Cabernet, so should never let a winemaker own their own winery.
We were either going back to Switzerland to go to hotel school, or we were going to come to California. We had to get closer to the vineyard thing.
It's like when you go to one of those winemaker dinners where the winemaker doesn't quite get that not everyone is telling jokes about the acid level in the wine all night.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle and welcome to podcast number 70. In this program, we feature Ignacio Blancas, winemaker for Summer's Wines.
Summer's Winery is one of the very few wineries in Napa Valley where you can walk into a vineyard next to the tasting room and sample several grape varietals right off the vine. It's those kinds of experiences that stick with visitors, and we remembered our first visit there 4 years ago with Summer's winemaker Ignacio Blancas. We finally caught up with Ignacio in June of 2012 to talk about his history in the wine business. Well, I'm here with Ignacio Blancas at Summer's Estate Wine. Summer's Estate Winery, I should say, because we're at the winery. Finally, after a few years, how are you doing, Ignacio?
Good. How are you, Ray?
I'm very good. We talked to you back during Premier, but met probably about 4 years ago, is my guess, when we were just tooling through and found this great place called Summer's.
Yes.
So how long have you been the winemaker here?
I've been working here since 1997, but I've been the winemaker since 2001.
And that's a pretty good length of time. So somewhere along the way in your lifetime, you got bit by the wine bug, or were you raised in this business?
Well, I was, before this, I was working for a catering business, doing a lot of events on, you know, a lot of wineries through the valley, catering for tours and weddings. So, you know, after cooking for them, we sit and taste wines paired with food, and yeah, I just fell in love with how the wine tastes with, you know, food. So,
And then all of a sudden, the next day, you're a winemaker. Yeah. That's how that happened.
Yeah, it's all of a sudden, in 1997, I saw that Summer's was looking for a cellar rot, and you know, I came to get interview, and yeah, I worked 1997 crush, and you know, that year later, I started to go to school for 4 years and got my degree, and yeah, took me about 4 to 5 years to get into the to be the winemaker here.
That's a pretty quick leap, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Some people take a lot longer than that to do it. Did you just happen to have a particular talent for it? Was it just the way things fell in the place?
Well, I was going to school kind of a part-time, but it took me 4 years. At the same time, I was working full-time. So it just, you know, working and school and, you know, it just, yeah.
Yeah. So were you from this area originally?
I'm from Mexico.
Where were you from in Mexico?
In Michoacán.
Which would be?
Southwest, close to Zihuatanejo, next to Zihuatanejo, Guadalajara.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a great area.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful area.
Yes.
And you came here. Was it a matter, did you come here when you were younger, or I mean?
I came here when I was 17 years old, yeah, in 1989, so.
A matter of just finding work, or?
Yeah, finding work. I had three or four brothers that work in the catering business, so I just came to help them, yeah.
That's a beautiful area, though, down there. Absolutely stunning.
Yes.
And I imagine that was hard for you to leave, though.
Oh, yeah. I still have parents, family down there. And I, you know, normally go every Christmas.
Oh, great.
Try to.
So you're a winemaker here at Summer's, and that's for a good long period of time, as I said.
Yeah, we are making between 8,000 to 12,000 cases here. I'm in charge of the winemaking facility. And at the same time, I'm in charge of the vineyard manager. I, you know, I'm 100% in charge of wine growing.
So you're wearing really to be almost like three hats.
Yes.
Vineyard manager, winemaker, and some a general manager too?
Yes.
Where do you find the time to do all this stuff?
Well, that's what you find me here this late. You know, I had to wait for the bottling truck to come in, and, you know, I just had to go over every single, you know, bottle, label, you know, that we're doing tomorrow. So,
I mean, I'm assuming you're a big wine drinker. You're a big wine fan, obviously, being a winemaker. Do you have something that you love to drink? I mean, what is your drink of choice normally?
Well, when I started working here, I was in love with like Zinfandel, but you know, after 3 or 4 years, you know, I say, you know what, we're in Napa Valley, and this is what this is all about, Cabernet, and this is what, you know, I'm fighting for, to, you know, make great Cabernets, grow good quality calves grapes.
So let's talk about the property here. Everything's estate. Everything you bottle is estate, or most everything?
Most everything. Yeah, we here at the winery side, we have about 22 acres, and about 70% is Cabernet Sauvignon, 20% Charbono, and 10% Sin. 4 miles north in Sonoma, which is Nice Valley, we have a 28-acre parcel, and 70% is Cab, 20% Merlot, and the other 10% is Bordeaux blend varietals. And so we normally crush about 200 to 250 tons. Out of those, about 30 tons we purchase from our neighbors, mainly Cabernet Sauvignon, which I'm in charge of the farming.
You're doing everything.
Yeah. Well, in order for us to buy the grapes, you know, we want to make sure, you know, it's taken care of.
And you're dealing with the property down here. Well, the good thing is, I've certainly talked to plenty of winemakers who are going 20, 30, 40 miles away. Mm-hmm. I've talked to guys in Australia who are going to the other side of the planet to manage other properties. So at least you've got a little bit of a quick drive. Are you bottling Charbono by itself?
Tomorrow, we are bottling 2010 Charbono.
And not many people around here do that, do they?
No, only about, you know, 13 to 16 wineries, but they make a small production, as, you know, as small as a barrel, just for them to have, for, you know, something unique. Or, you know, some other wineries bottle, you know, 200 cases for wine club members, you know, something unique. It's small production. But we are the larger producer with 1,500 to 2,000 cases a year.
That's a good amount. Yeah. Now, I remember you also had Dolcetto. Do you still have that?
Well, we have a Dolcetto row planted over here, okay. Just for demonstration.
Just for demonstration. Yeah. You're not growing it.
No.
Okay. And I should explain that to our listeners. That was the one thing I loved about coming here the very first time. Okay. What did you call that area? You had a name for it, like a petting farm or something like that.
Yeah. Petting vineyard.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah. So what you have is about how many rows of different varietals?
7 to 9.
Okay. And they're everything from, again, Dolcetto. You have Charbono out there.
Yeah, Sangiovese, Charbono, Merlot, Cab, Petit Verdot.
Which on it?
Muscatelli. Yeah.
Yeah. And on its own, no big deal. But the cool thing is that your visitors can go out there.
Yeah. They come over and taste and see the leaf, you know, different from each other and cluster shape, you know. Yeah. They, you know, notice the difference. Even if eventually when it's a private tour, you know, I come over with them and show them the difference between one varietal to another one.
So people can get a real tactile experience. They can touch it. They can feel it. Best of all, mm-hmm. they can get a taste of what it's like before the whole process begins.
Yes.
And like everybody says, you know, the wine, good wine is mm-hmm. always made in the vineyard.
That's right.
But otherwise, some of the varietals you have in there are strictly for demonstration
purposes. Yes.
Great. So you focus on mainly Cabernet.
Yes.
And, of course, you have the Charbono.
What
other varietals are you bottling?
Merlot and Zinfandel. Yeah. We have Chardonnay. Sometimes we bottle a little bit of Petit Syrah for, again, wine club members. Mm-hmm. We still make Muscatelli.
Tell me about that. What was it like? What's that varietal like?
The Muscatelli?
Yeah.
It's like a floral, like a orange peel, like, you know. And it's like, we use it as a dessert wine.
Is there, okay, so it's a dessert wine.
A dessert wine,
great,
yes.
Okay. And what does something like that sell as a dessert wine? I'm curious.
You know, $20.
Oh, so it's a great
one. But it's a 500 milliliter. We also make a little bit of Charbono Rosé.
Charbono Rosé. I've never heard of Charbono Rosé.
Yeah. We make about 150 cases of Charbono Rosé every year. Mm-hmm. We do a Seigne out of our Charbono grapes and... we just a picnic wine, you know, from April through August, you know. We just got a review by San Francisco Chronicle newspaper that, you know, recommend, you know, the only winery in Napa, Summer Chardonnay Rosé 2011.
So do you think you might expand that at any time at all? Probably
not, you know, just that's nice little niche to have, yeah.
Have you thought of any other kind of rosé for any reason?
On the past, we made some Cabernet Rosé, but we had two rosés at that time and said, it's, you know, why two?
Don't want to give choices on that. No, Corks versus caps. Do you have any particular opinion? I know from what I'm aware of your wines, you guys do strictly corks, but I don't know about your whites.
Corks.
Why?
Yeah. It's just a classic, you know, once you sit and open a bottle of wine, you know, it's just more like, yeah, a bottle of wine is a bottle of wine. I know if you're doing some kind, probably Sauvignon Blanc or something that doesn't, you know, require cork, you know, it's okay as screw cap. I'm okay with that. Yeah.
How about the glass enclosure? Have you seen that at all?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Do you have any thoughts on that? Any opinions?
I think, you know, if it's working for their program, I'm okay with that, but I will never, you know, kind of go with that direction either.
Just as some people have mentioned that being a good alternative to a screw cap because it doesn't make the horrific noise, of course, a screw cap makes.
Yeah.
And it does have a certain look to it, which is sort of sexy like a cork.
Yeah,
does.
Probably it's better than, you know, it's better than a screw cap, yeah.
Well, and the other issue, of course, if there's maybe a possibility that might prevent any kind of corkage down the road.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Have you been involved with auction in the past in any way, shape, or form? At the barrel auction or?
Yeah, we've been involved. Probably last time it was like 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. But we stopped because we either do Premier Napa Valley or wine auction. We don't do both in the same. Yeah, so for the last 4 years, we've been doing Premier Napa Valley. And now this year we're doing wine auction again.
Oh, good. Are you going to have a lot or are you going to be a barrel auction?
Yes, we are having a lot. We just delivered the barrel today.
Mm-hmm. Oh, excellent. We're up here on Tubbs Lane, which is officially in Calistoga, correct?
Yes.
And have you, since now the Calistoga is officially in AVA, will you plan on putting that on the label in any way?
We are. We are, since last year, bottling, we're starting to put Calistoga IBA in the bottle. Yeah,
I think it's a great idea because it shows, you know, the pride in this area, and there are some incredible wines that come from up here.
Yeah,
and so my point to this is for people who visit Calistoga, of course, being at the way northern part of the valley, worth the trip up on this end, Tubbs Lane.
Yeah.
So what else other than the Charbonneau Rosé? What else is new? What else are you guys doing new? Anything?
No, pretty much we stay with our same program of making that Calistoga cab, Napa Valley Calistoga cab from this property. Also, we make a Reserve Cabernet Sauvignon, a small amount, like 500 cases, you know, the best of our 400 barrels, you know, for the reserve.
What does something like that sell for?
$65.
Oh, so that's not bad.
Yeah, not bad.
Oh,
yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah, and from this property, we have the Calistoga cab, Reserve cab, Charbonneau, and Zinfandel. From Nice Valley, we have our Merlot on a Nice Valley cab.
So at the time, you've been a winemaker here. One thing I've learned about Napa Valley is there's an amazing amount of cooperation between winemakers and owners. Have you found that to be so?
Yes. Since there's a lot of organizational sharing groups, you know, to talk about, you know, how it's been in the past to in order to avoid, you know, to get things better for the future. Yeah.
You're all trying to do the same thing, make great wine, which you've already achieved that now.
We all share, you know, ideas, so, you know.
Tell me a little bit about the owners of Summers Winery.
Well, Summers and Beth and Jim Summers, they were bankers in San Francisco. And all of a sudden, you know, probably they were spending time visiting Napa Valley on the weekend, Sonoma. And, you know, they started buying the property in Sonoma County, Nice Valley, and they purchased that property in the early 80s, and, you know, at the beginning, they were just selling the grapes to Yacht Hills and Whitehall Lane and other wineries, you know. I think on the early 80s, Whitehall Lane got a good review by Parker about, you know, Nice Valley Merlot, one of the best Merlots ever. So, but on 1996, this property here was for sale, and Jim said, you know what, it's our time to, you know, buy this property and start making our own wine. So in 1996, he purchased this 22 acres and start remodeling the winery, the old winery that he was here. And now he's making his own wines. And since then, you know.
And the cool thing is, you were here right at the beginning.
Yes.
I mean, a breath away from the beginning.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about grape growing. I didn't know anything about winemaking. I just started working on, you know, Harvest 1997, and after I finished harvesting, you know, next year I started pruning the vines. You know, they were showing me how to do it, but right away in the springtime I went to school and started learning, you know, vineyard, viticulture and winemaking. So yeah, again, it took me 4 years to go through all my school.
Where did you go to school?
I went to Santa Rosa Junior College, mm-hmm. with Rich Thomas, and Napa Valley College with Richie. And I took some classes at UC Davis, and I'm still attending courses here and there to upgrade all the new stuff that is coming up.
There's always something new coming up too, isn't there? You know, it's a thing, it's interesting is, you know, in the beginning I used to think, well, geez, everybody came from UC Davis. But of course, as I've come to learn, everybody comes from everywhere. You know, it comes down to your talent, doesn't it? I mean, it's got to be a little bit, whether you were raised as a farmer or not, some of it's kind of gotten in your blood, hasn't
it? Yeah, probably, you know, after after I came up here from Mexico, you know, probably I could not afford to just go for 4 years to UC Davis without working, you know. So I was doing both things at the same time in local colleges. Yeah.
Yeah. How old were you when you started here? I'm just trying to get an age perspective.
I was 23.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. You kind of lived the dream a bit, didn't
you? Yeah.
That's really fantastic. Wow. Being that you're involved in auction, I wonder, does it ever, I'm sure you guys are always having people contacting you regarding some kind of a charity, this or a charity. Does that ever become too much of a problem, or is that just simply something that comes along with the business?
You know, probably, you know, through the year, we'll get about 20, 30 phone calls about, you know, donating charity. And, you know, at least half of them, we can do it, you know. So, which is pretty good number.
It's a very good number.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. To do, you know, twice as much, we just, you know, we put it small and, you know, probably we don't have the personnel to be there the whole, you know, every time they ask for. But we'll try it. We can be there. At least we donate a minor or two for some kind of a lot, you know.
And you're still in business to make a profit in the long run. Yeah. That's what feeds the business. So do you make your own stuff at all on the side? I'm curious.
No. Not yet.
Oh, the look on your face was perfect. What are you asking me that question for?
not yet. Yeah, I have plans probably. Eventually, I'll do something for
myself. Well, I'm not saying necessarily something you want to sell, but just something. Have you experimented with things, you know, the one-off barrel or something like that? I mean, just to kind of play around a bit of it, you know?
No.
Okay.
But I know, you know, eventually if I, you know, I already have, you know, kind of a thinking about it for the last few years. If I, you know, want to start my own, definitely I have plans for it, you know.
Good.
Yeah, probably Cab, Pinot, yeah.
Do you have a preference between the two biggies, Cab versus Pinot? I mean, or
Cab.
Cab,
yeah. Cab. But, you know, normally if I wanted to start small, you know, a couple hundred cases of each, I'll try to do both.
In the end, how did you end up with 2011 being the crazy season it was?
I think at the end, it was pretty good, I think, you know. We normally pick late because in this area, especially in Nice Valley, it gets really cold at night. So we normally harvest in Nice Valley like after the first week of October. And, you know, last year, you know, we had rain late on the season. And then we started getting the rain, and probably 20% of my fruit was ready to pick it before rain. The other one wasn't. And I know a lot of people start picking before, even if it wasn't ripe or right after, because they thought it was going to get mold. And, you know, I just picked whatever was ready and say, well, I'll just let it dry. I know I start having a little bit of problems with mold, but let it hang for another 2 or 3 weeks, and probably I lost about, you know, 20 to 30% of my crop by, you know, cleaning that bunch rot by, you know, with my guys by hand before we bring it in.
Sure.
So I lost about 30%, but at the end, the quality was good.
So you got two things going on there. One is you've got the loss that's going to happen. Two is also a little more expensive labor in the process too.
Yeah.
But in the end, and theoretically, you'll make that up in price to some degree because this is what it costs to make the wine.
Yeah, because if I decided to pick it earlier, you know, I said maybe it's going to be turn out to be, you know, not that good of the year for us, you know.
Yeah. Well, I know you're not a mind reader, but now we're looking at 2012, which started off warm, and there was kind of an odd spring going on. You know, any thoughts about what we're headed for this year at all?
I think a harvest is going to be about time, you know, probably normal time at this point. You know, I know we haven't seen any, you know, high temperature at this point, but, you know, things are moving along pretty good. We are on the process of flowering right now and looks plenty of fruit right now.
Good.
So we're just hoping that, you know, the fruit set will finish right. Two more weeks and then we'll, you know.
Then you'll sleep a little bit better.
Yeah.
Exactly. Ignacio, if our listeners would like to learn about you and to learn about Summers Winery online on the web, how would they find out about you?
Well, either go on the internet on at summerswinery.com or call us at 707-942-5508. So we're here for whoever wants to come and visit Summers Winery. Yeah, we are a small family winery, friendly, and yeah, we're here to share any ideas, comments, or, you know, answer questions.
And you're not by appointment up here either? People
no,
just walk
no,
in.
We open 7 days a week from 10:30 to 5, so.
And best of all, they can come here and hang out with the grapes themselves.
Yeah, in the vineyard, yeah.
Ignacio, thanks for the time.
Thank you, Ray. Thank
Appreciate
you for
it.
Visiting us.
Excellent.
Thank you.
To learn more about Summers Winery, go to summerswinery.com.
Thanks for listening to this program. Watch for our next podcast featuring Joel Gott of Joel Gott Wines and Gott's Roadside in St. Helena. Cheers.
Life Between the Vines was produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Original music by Tim Turton. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our web geek is Tim Panicucci. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2012.